I am Linda von Tolberg for BizNews. Well, autism is increasingly understood through the lens of neurodiversity rather than as something requiring correction. With expanded diagnostic criteria, greater awareness and shifting societal perspectives, understanding is evolving. Dr. Emil Goos, a postdoctoral fellow at the University of South Africa and a leading international advocate for autism, joins us in the BizNews studio today to discuss his work on autism awareness. Hi, and Dr. Goos, so nice to see you.
Thank you so much, Linda. It's a major honor. Thank you very much.
Can you tell us about your personal journey with autism?
Yes. Let me tell you, Linda, that I know how it feels to be excluded due to a lack of understanding from society with reference to the capabilities of autistic individuals. I was non-speaking for the first 15 years of my life. Wow. I understand the discrimination faced by those who society perceives doesn't fit in nearly into public spaces and into society. I also understand the painful misconceptions that surrounds autistic people and their families. And of course, I understand the silent burden of the mental health challenges that these individuals experience. And of course, when you ask me about my autism self-advocacy journey, it came from a very, very dark place. There was a time where, at one stage of my life, where I believed that society wasn't built for someone like me. That belief pushed me to the brink and I attempted to commit suicide. You know, and the reason why I'm honest with this is because that is the reality that autistic people face in South Africa. You know, research has proven that currently we've got the highest suicide rate of autistic people in the world, and the living age of autistic person in South Africa is 35 years old. But yet again, throughout my personal journey through that dark place, I found purpose. Now, my inspiration to become a self-advocate emerged from those quiet, invisible moments when I felt that I wasn't heard. Growing up as an autistic child in a world that often defines the world through conformity, I knew I had one or two choices: shrink into silence or rise with purpose. And of course, I chose the latter. But I want to explain something and I want to make something clear that this journey has not been solitary. You know, I currently walk this road with our support system, my support system, including, you know, my autistic Alexic wife, Sammy, alongside Mark Kim, our rock, our carer, and also a daily support, wisdom and belief, and also a fellow autism self-advocate with me, in a belief that reminds us that family and continuous support is the heartbeat of resilience. Now, on this advocacy journey that we do on a personal level, we do advocacy on a social media page called Special Need Cafe. Our advocacy and awareness Facebook page as a space of belonging. It is more than just a page. It's a way of living, breathing, and community where our stories unfold, but also where we do awareness. We share not only our advocacy, but our day-to-day life. It's raw, it's real, and it's rooted in love and continuous acceptance. And anyone is welcome to join this platform.
So what misconceptions about autism do you want to challenge in South Africa specifically?
There's one big misconception. And one of the most damaging misconceptions is that autistic people must fit into a specific mold, or that their is one correct way to communicate. The truth is, autism is a spectrum of beautiful complexibility. We are not broken, we are different, and difference is not a deficit. You know, I challenge these myths through action. You know, and in my personal journey, not only as a postdoctoral fellow, but also as the president of the board of directors of the International Council on Developmental Learning, I champion developmental and respectful practices. I conduct research that confronts the enormous gap in understanding and how different cultures perceive neurodivergence. You know, advocacy gave me a global voice. And through my advocacy work and also my work that I've been doing throughout the years, I've contributed to South Africa's official response to the United Nations, which we helped to write the Schoeller Report, but also as the representative of underrepresented groups on the Commonwealth Disabled People's Forum. It helped me on a higher political level to elevate African autistic voices at big events such as the Congress of State Parties at the United Nations in New York. But one of the things that we need to do is that our stories must be told. And therefore, not only in boardrooms, but on social media platforms and everywhere. Remember, there's a saying that we always say, and which I approach on a daily basis, is leave no one behind, and also nothing about us without us. And that is the perceptions that we need to carry throughout our lives.
So you've made an impact globally as well. So how did these international bodies get to know of you? How did you get that international recognition?
Well, it's actually a funny story because through this dark place that I experienced, I was in a psychiatric ward and now, of course, you can look me up on LinkedIn where I wrote an article, and the article is also on the Special Needs Cafe where I wrote an academic article based on my advocacy journey, which explains it beautifully. But to make a long story short, in my attempt to commit suicide, I was in a psychiatric ward for a week, and in the psychiatric ward, I received a lot of therapy, you know, discussing my challenges. And the psychologist at the hospital actually recommended that I do cell advocacy as someone who basically was at that stage completing a master's degree, but also someone who who can show parents what he's done. And also, more importantly, to build my own self-confidence as well. And that is basically where this journey started. And after my release at hospital, it was the psychologist who actually recommended that I join an organization called Autism South Africa, which I just shared my story. And I met a couple of organizations as well, just to speak in front of parents, to share my story, to build my own self-confidence. And of course, one parent become one parent. And you know, my biggest satisfaction was if I could share my story to one parent, then it would be all worth it as well. And the amount of satisfaction that I got just to share my story and to give hope, you know, was fantastic. And of course, I was invited to speak at big events, big education events, big organization events. And of course, the crowd grew. And my big break came in 2019, where I was asked to represent South Africa at the United Nations. And that is where this journey started, where I eventually got elected after my speech on the Commonwealth Disabled People's Forum. And and then my advocacy grew bigger and bigger and bigger, where I started not only to advocate for myself, but for the broader neurodiverse community as well. But and that is my advocacy is intertwined with my not only with my personal life, but it also is intertwined with my research as well. So yeah, it was a major milestone. And I realized that one of the big lessons that I've learned is that, you know, that together, you know, we are strong, and, you know, and you can't advocate on your own. And it's a support network that can help an individual achieve greater rights.
Well, there's a disability bill that it will be signed soon by President Ramaphosa. Does that address your concerns with for people with disabilities? What would you like to see happen in South Africa?
Now, we need to understand where this is all coming from. And keep in mind that we've got a lot of organizations that are contributing, a lot of stakeholders, not only in government, but in civil society, that are contributing towards this disability policy. And it's based on the commitment South Africa made in 2007 when we signed the United Nations Convention on the Rights of Persons with Disabilities. And the UNCRPD, which governs the whole disability movement and fighting for disability rights all over the world, played a major role in our constitution. And of course, this was the framework, the basis of the White Paper 6, and also the different inclusive policies in different organizations that we are, that South Africa is currently underwritten. But South Africa signed that bill, leaving no one behind, without any hesitation and without any adjustments as well. And this is where this whole disability bill comes in, to represent all disabled people throughout South Africa and making sure that we are accommodated in civil society, in education, and making sure that according to my field, neurodivergent voices matter and that no one is left behind. We marched, the Special Needs Cafe organized a march on the 29th of March at the Union Buildings, where we basically advocated for this new disability bill, where neurodivergent voices were supposed to be included. And of course, with myself and Joaquin that are on the UNCRPD committee, not only on Commonwealth level, but also contributed to the United Nations set of questions, we basically made sure that neurodivergent voices are included in South Africa, referring to the gaps that we're currently experiencing and also addressing the challenges when it comes to employment, when it comes to making sure that carers are supported and getting social grants, and that neurodivergent individuals have a purpose, and to ensure that education is inclusive and accessible. You know, what we're currently fighting for, and this is a response that we are waiting for our government, especially our president, is, and in the memorandum that we signed, that the president needs to respond us to at the march, we asked for our own ministry to address these specific issues. And of course, when I referred earlier in the interview with the statistics, of course, it is the challenges is a global problem, but because we are in a third world country, you know, the situation is more prominent, and that is what we are currently advocating for. And of course, there's a lot of negativity from different organizations regarding this bill, based on their years of experience and also based on the disappointment that they have with the current government, but. You know, the perception is that, for me personally, is that, you know, we need to come together. And I must say that being involved now in this process with this new disability bill, you know, we made sure that neurodivergent voices are included in this new disability bill, and that invisible impairments, the unseen challenges, are also being accommodated, and that no one is left behind.
Well, you told us about your journey and how important support was. So if you could give advice to any parents or autistic children or neurodivergent children, what would you tell them?
You know, it's actually quite interesting because I always say that parents need to make their support base strong, first of all, because it all starts with the ground level when it comes to the community of practice, when you look particularly at the school environment, parents, but also when it comes to general society, we all need to work together to ensure that that individual can cope and so that individual is happy, and to make sure that that individual contributes towards society. And for me personally, I would, first of all, when it comes to the household, I would say to parents to make their support base strong, because this journey is long. It's a hard journey. You know, I've seen there's a lot of advocacy movements of young parents that are currently happening in our country, especially young fathers that are advocating for their children, which is good because it gives a unique experience of the parents, especially from a South African perspective, as there's a major a gap in culture when you look particularly at how different cultures experience neurodiversity in general. But, you know, the autism field tends to humble you when you look particularly at the journey, you know, the lifelong journey that we're currently experiencing. And therefore, you know, I see the future where neurodivergence is not just accepted, but celebrated as well. And a world where inclusion is co-created with autistic individuals at center and not on emergence. But again, it all comes down to making the support base strong, and that will be my advice for families.
You are also a big campaigner that the sunflower lanyard would come to South Africa. Can you explain what that is and why you want that?
Now, thank you very much for this question, because I feel that it's a very important initiative that we need, not only in South Africa but throughout the world. And we are quite fortunate enough that we've got airlines at major airports that accept it and that train their staff on the sunflower lanyard. And I know that Markim has been advocating for this to bring it in South Africa. But just to give you a definition, the sunflower lanyard, often called the hidden disability sunflower, is a discrete tool used globally to indicate that the person has a hidden impairment and may need additional support, time, or understanding in public spaces. A funny story is that a couple of days ago, when I spoke at a major international conference, my family used this at the major airports, and it made our life a lot easier. But just to give you the key facts and the origin of the sunflower lanyard, it was first launched in the UK in 2016 at a major airline in Great Britain. And it's a simple green lanyard decorated with a bright yellow sunflower. And definitely the purpose is to make staff aware of the challenges of the individual, but also to signal to staff and the public that the wearer has an invisible disability, such as it can be autism, anxiety, chronic fatigue, and hearing loss, or different other invisible impairments. Wearing this lanyard is not a personal choice, and it doesn't require documentation. And that's the true value of awareness. You know, when we were at the airports where we fought very hard to be included and to be accommodated, it made a major difference when it comes to visibility, without saying any words, and it created a lot of awareness. And respite accommodations were implemented based on what they saw. So the recognition of this, it basically helps not only in airports, but supermarkets, healthcare settings, and public transport settings around the world. But it will all, the main purpose of this, it will empower autistic individuals that may struggle with communication or sensory processing, but don't have an obvious visible impairment. And when staff see someone wearing the sunflower lanyard, they are encouraged to be more patient, understanding, and ready to provide assistance. And it's something that we desperately need in South Africa. And let me tell you that it would have made our lives a lot easier when we, if we had this, not only at international trips, but also in general society as well. Because without saying words, people were aware, and those that were educated in the field of autism basically made a lot of, they made the difference and they made an effort to accommodate.
So Emil Goos, thanks so much for speaking to us.
Thank you. It was a major honor. Thank you.